Hearts in Atlantis, Disc 15.
Each dorm in our complex had been built at the same time, and each had a big common area in the basement, as well as the lounges in the center of each floor. There was a TV alcove, which filled up mostly for weekend sports events, and a vampire soap opera called Dark Shadows during the week. A canteen corner with half a dozen vending machines, a ping-pong table, and a number of chess and checkerboards. There was also a meeting area with a podium standing before several rows of folding wooden chairs. We'd had a floor meeting there at the beginning of the year, at which Deary had explained the dorm rules and the dire consequences of unsatisfactory room inspections. I'd have to say that room inspections were Deary's big thing. That and ROTC, of course. He stood behind the little wooden podium upon which he had laid a thin file folder. I suppose it contained his notes. He was still dressed in his damp and muddy rotsy fatigues. He looked exhausted from his day of shoveling and sanding, but he also looked excited. Turned on is how we'd put it a year or two later. Deary had been on his own at the first floor meeting. This time, he had backup. Sitting against the green cinder block wall, hands folded in his lap and knees primly together, was Sven Gerritsen, the Dean of Men. He said almost nothing during that meeting and looked benign even when the air grew stormy. Standing beside Deary, wearing a black topcoat over a charcoal gray suit and looking very can-do, was Ebersole, the disciplinary officer. After we had settled in the chairs and those of us who smoked had lit up, Deary looked first over his shoulder at Gerritsen, then at Ebersole. Ebersole gave him a little smile. "Go ahead, David, please. They're your boys." I felt a rankle of irritation. I might be a lot of things, including a creep who laughed at cripples when they fell down in the pouring rain, but I was not Deary Dearborn's boy. Deary gripped the podium and looked at us solemnly, perhaps thinking, far back in the part of his mind reserved expressly for dreamy dreams, that a day would come when he would address his staff officers this way, setting some great tide of Hanoi-bound troops in motion. "Jones is missing," he said finally. It came out sounding portentous and corny, like a line in a Charles Bronson movie. "He's in the infirmary," I said, and enjoyed the surprise on Deary's face. Ebersole looked surprised, too. Gerritsen just went on gazing benignly into the middle distance, like a man on a three-pipe high. "What happened to him?" Deary asked. This wasn't in the script, either the one he had worked out or the one he and Ebersole had prepared together, and Deary began to frown. He was also gripping the podium more tightly, as if afraid it might fly away. "Far down, go boom," Ronnie said, and puffed up when the people around him laughed. "Also, I think he's got pneumonia or double bronchitis or something like that." He caught Skip's eye, and I thought Skip nodded slightly. This was Skip's show, not Deary's, but if we were lucky, if Stoke was lucky, the three at the front of the room would never know it. "Tell me this from the beginning," Deary said. The frown was becoming a glower. It was the way he'd looked after discovering his door had been shaving creamed.